Dr. William Luther Pierce on Skating on Thin Ice, 1997.
Hello. I've been astounded by all of the public attention focused on the decision of a school board in Oakland, California, a black district, to treat the black version of English, or Ebonics as they call it, as a separate language in the schools. Now, what goes on in their schools is their business, and if they want to learn Swahili or invent a pseudo-grammar for black English, let them. So far as I'm concerned, the farther they separate themselves from white America, linguistically or otherwise, the better. But the liberals in the media don't look at it quite that way. They're fascinated by the Ebonics issue, but they don't know quite how to deal with it. On the one hand, they hate to see anything which separates blacks from whites, or which calls their ideology of egalitarianism into question. On the other hand, they have long had such a patronizing attitude toward blacks that they can't quite bring themselves to respond negatively to anything blacks do, no matter how foolish. The liberals have encouraged the development of black studies programs in the schools, and then have smiled patronizingly when blacks have gone off on wild and really nutty black history tangents. For example, their claim that the ancient Egyptians and Carthaginians were blacks. They even claim that the Greek queen of Egypt, Cleopatra, was black. In fact, the latest craze among black history enthusiasts is a curriculum called the African American Baseline Essays. Courses based on this curriculum teach students in our public schools that not only were the ancient Egyptians Negroes, but that they were great scientists and inventors who developed quantum mechanics and the theory of evolution and built airplanes, which they used to fly around the pyramids for business and pleasure, until, of course, the evil Europeans appeared on the scene and enslaved them and stole their inventions. They're actually teaching such things to children in the public schools in Milwaukee and a number of other cities, and it's beginning to make the liberals a little uncomfortable. To the liberals, blacks are above reproach. So how can they tell them that they're on a self-destructive course with Ebonics and their black Egyptian aeronauts? Ha! Huh. Well, anyways, bro, that be the way I sees it. Actually, it's good to have a little comic relief occasionally. What the liberals and their pets are doing to our world usually isn't very funny. Have you seen some of the newer programs on television? If you haven't looked recently at what MTV is offering to our teenagers, make a point to survey their programs. They're pushing as hard as they can the idea that miscegenation, that sex between whites and blacks, is a natural and good thing, a fashionable thing. They are deliberately and blatantly encouraging teenaged white girls to have sexual relations with blacks. Now, I don't mean to imply by what I've just said that the Jewish owner of MTV, Mr. Sumner Redstone, as he calls himself these days, is a fuzzy-minded liberal. No, Mr. Redstone is no liberal. He is a hard-headed man who knows exactly what he's doing. The liberals are the trendy Gentile idiots who smile approvingly at Mr. Redstone and who frown disapprovingly at me when I point out that he is a Jew and that he is doing what he does because he is a Jew. Mr. Redstone and his fellow Jews are far, far more dangerous and destructive than the liberals, even though they depend on the liberals to make their destructive work possible and to protect them from retribution. Liberals are essentially irrational, and left to themselves can easily wreck a society. But the damage liberals do is usually inadvertent. When they encouraged blacks to believe themselves equal in ability to whites, They didn't really anticipate the nutty extremes to which this would lead blacks. And when liberals cheered the drive by the controlled media for all of those civil rights laws of the last few decades, they didn't really anticipate the wrecking of our schools and our cities that would result. Liberals always are wringing their hands, lamenting the mess their programs have made of things, and then pushing for even nuttier programs to try to fix the mess. Mr. Redstone and the other media bosses are quite different. They know with a satanic certainty what they are doing. When Mr. Redstone encourages teenaged white girls to date blacks, his motivation is purely satanic. His conscious and deliberate aim is the destruction of our race. But the liberals aren't capable of understanding that. To them, Mr. Redstone is a nice man, a progressive man, who just wants us all, black and white, to love each other. In addition to the media bosses who are deliberately destroying America, and the liberals who are helping them without really understanding what's happening, there's another really big group of people who must take some of the blame. Those are the folks we might call individualists. They don't actively collaborate with people like Mr. Redstone the way the liberals do, and they generally have only contempt for the liberals. They figure that their job is to look out for themselves, and everyone else can do the same. I run into a lot of these people among white businessmen, but they're really spread throughout our society in all occupations. Most of these individualists aren't malicious like the Jewish media bosses, and they have a much better grip on reality than the liberals do. What they lack is any sense of responsibility. Ask one of these individualists what he thinks about the fact that some public schools are teaching that the ancient Egyptians were black and were flying airplanes 4,000 years before the white man flew. His one concern will be that his children not be in such a school. If the schools want to teach that to the children of other whites, that's not his concern. He may agree with you that such teaching is ridiculous, but he knows that anybody who says so publicly risks being branded a racist, and that's bad for business. Ask an individualist what he thinks about Mr. Redstone's poisonous race-mixing propaganda on MTV, and he will back away from you in a hurry. His thought will be that he has nothing personal to gain from being involved in that dispute. Mention to him Redstone's Jewishness, and he will turn around and start running. He knows that any criticism of the Jews is very bad for business. If you try to drag him into that, he will become hostile to you, not to Mr. Redstone. And he'll be thinking, hey, I can keep my own daughter away from blacks, and I don't have time to worry about what Mr. Redstone does to other people's daughters. Unfortunately, all too often he'll be dead wrong about his ability to keep his own daughter safe. Many individualists have a strong authoritarian streak in them. They respect not only authority, but also money and power. They have a subconscious conviction that anyone with as much money as Mr. Redstone has can't be all bad. They can't help but admire him as a smart and successful businessman, even if his business is genocide. An authoritarian individualist is a person who habitually ignores facts which lead to inconvenient conclusions. He is a person who may despise draft dodgers and drug abusers and men who use the power of a public office to coerce women into having sex with them, and yet he will jump at the chance to shake hands with a man who is all of those things, if that man happens to be the President of the United States. He'll say, "Yes, sir, Mr. President," with a proud grin on his face, no matter what sort of filth happens to be president. Now, if you add up all the people I've mentioned so far, the soft-brained liberals and the individualists and, of course, the no-brain couch potatoes. You've got a majority of the white population. So how can the minority of us who are concerned about what Mr. Redstone is doing and believe that he must be stopped at any cost, how can we hope to prevail? How can we stop Mr. Redstone and the other media bosses from completing their program of destroying our people? When the liberals are against us, when the individualists will take orders from whoever has the power at the moment, and when most of the rest of the people neither understand nor care what's going on, how can we prevail? Perhaps you believe that I make these broadcasts just because it is my moral responsibility to do so, that I expose myself to the hatred of the government and the controlled media and all of their supporters just because it is the right thing to do, whether there is any chance of making a difference or not. I must tell you that I believe that every man and every woman should do what he or she believes to be right, without regard for the personal consequences. I believe that every white person has a moral obligation to oppose Mr. Redstone, whether he can see a way to defeat him or not. And I often am disappointed that so few actually accept this responsibility. But I also must tell you that there is more than a sense of moral obligation which compels me to work for the future of our people and to expose myself to the hatred of all of our enemies. There is also my conviction that, powerful as our enemies may seem now, ultimately they cannot win. The liberals cannot win because the world that they want cannot exist. The liberals believe in equality, and there is no equality, and never has been, and never will be. They want a world which is contrary to Mother Nature and to human nature, and there is no way they can have it. That is why every program the liberals have been able to persuade the government to enforce on us has been a failure. And Mr. Redstone and his fellow Jews cannot win because they are destroyers, not creators. Throughout history, they have destroyed nation after nation. But it is because of their inherently destructive nature that they have never been able to fasten their grip on any nation permanently. Their own account in the Old Testament of what they did to Egypt before they moved on serves as a paradigm for what they have done always and everywhere. Of course, it's not enough that our enemies eventually should fail. They must fail before they have completely destroyed every prospect of a healthy future for us. We must get rid of them while there is still a possibility for rebuilding, while there still are enough sound white people left to make a new start. Now, I'll tell you why I believe we can do that. I believe that the enemies of white America will fail, will become weak enough for us to destroy them, soon enough for us to salvage a future for our people, because I can see the clear signs of their impending failure all around me. I can see the signs that their system is coming unglued, that they are losing their grip on things already. You know, what most of us are able to see of the world outside our own neighborhoods is only what we see on television, only what the controlled media let us see. And of course, they want to convince us that their grip is still very firm, that they still have everything under control, that their programs are working, that most people are satisfied, that there is no stopping them, and that they are inevitable, the wave of the future. But if that were so, why would they choose as badly flawed a front man as Bill Clinton? Why not choose someone who could win the respect of a substantial portion of the public? If they really had a grip on things, they wouldn't need a president so crippled by scandal and by his own obvious moral inadequacies that he could win the support of only 23% of the electorate. They chose Clinton only because they need someone who will be completely under their control. Someone who needs them as much as they need him. They are afraid to have someone in office who might be strong enough to oppose them or have enough public support to oppose them, because they know just how quickly the game would be over for them if any president stood up against them and called on all decent people to stand up with him and rid the country of people like Mr. Redstone. They know just how unstable the country has become, just how much anger and resentment is boiling right under the surface, just how precarious their position really is. If most Americans felt like the ones they show on television, bubbling about how wonderful all of the diversity in our society is, the media bosses and their collaborators wouldn't be so desperate to silence dissent. But they really are desperate. The big Jewish organizations like the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Morris Deese's Southern Poverty Law Center, and the B'nai B'rith are constantly agitating for new laws to silence people like me, and in fact, to silence everyone who doesn't like Mr. Redstone and his program to mix the races. If they were confident that the public agreed with their programs, they wouldn't need to silence us. They could just laugh at us. But they aren't laughing. They're sweating. There's a new book out by the best-known black newspaper columnist in America, Carl Rowan. It's called The Coming Race War in America, and it is absolutely nutty. It's completely paranoid. Rowan, as a longtime journalist, has a little better view of what's going on and what people are thinking than most of us do. He gets a lot of letters from angry people, mostly angry white men, and they've scared him out of his wits. He really believes that Newt Gingrich, Patrick Buchanan, Gordon Liddy, and I, along with many, many other white men, are engaged in a gigantic conspiracy to overthrow the government and get rid of him and all the other non-whites. I wish it were so. I really do. But the fact is that Rowan, like many other liberals, black and white, is overly jumpy, overly nervous, overly worried, overly insecure. They are seeing conspiracies where there are none yet. And it is because they know how much anger is out there, how fed up many people are. They know that the house of cards the media bosses and the liberals have built is in danger of getting knocked down. But their fear makes them imagine dangers that don't really exist yet. Yes, Carl Rowan has gone around the bend with his paranoia. But where he imagines dangers, I see real prospects for hopeful developments. The biggest hope I have is based on what I've learned about public opinion. There is a huge swing element out there, which right now is supporting the status quo, because the people in this element are to a very large extent the individualists, the authoritarians. These people are not ideologues. They have no commitment to liberalism or to what Mr. Redstone is doing. They give passive support to these destructive policies now because most of them don't yet feel personally threatened or personally damaged by them. And they still look to the government and to the mass media as authorities which should be respected and obeyed. Furthermore, the alternative to the status quo is unacceptable to the individualists. The prospect of chaos and conflict is unacceptable. They know that a strong move against the government at this time would lead to conflict and chaos. They know that a strong move against the minorities would lead to rioting and conflict. They don't want that. The status quo, no matter its problems, seems better, for now anyway. They always respect power, and as long as Mr. Redstone and his fellow media bosses seem powerful, the individualists will go along with them and will not oppose them. But when they no longer seem powerful, the individualists will withdraw their support. They will not fight for Mr. Redstone and his policies like the liberals will. And when the status quo becomes bad enough that conflict and chaos no longer look so bad in comparison, they also will withdraw their support for the status quo. So, to a large extent, it's a matter of perception. And that's a rather fragile thing. And it's evident to everyone that perceptions are shifting, that they're not what they used to be even 10 years ago. There is much more of a feeling of instability and uncertainty in the air. And that feeling will increase. Perceptions will continue to shift because the destructive process which has been set in motion by Mr. Redstone and the other enemies of our people will continue. Things which used to be solid and safe will continue to be undermined. And there's not too much our enemies can do about that. It's the price they must pay for carrying on their destructive activity. The recent presidential election is an example. They wanted a completely pliable tool in the White House, someone who will do whatever they tell him, someone utterly without principle or scruple. Well, they got their tool, but the price they paid is a lowering of respect for the government. The price they paid is getting their tool in with the support of only 23% of the electorate, a new low, and the process will continue. Karl Rowan and the liberals know it, or at least they sense it, and that's what makes them paranoid. They sense that the ice they're skating on is getting thinner and thinner. The ice will break sooner than anyone imagines. Our responsibility is to remain a beacon of truth and of hope for a healthy future, and to become a brighter and brighter beacon so that when the ice does break, enough people will know which way to turn. Thanks for being with me again today.